chapter 16. And he also said to his disciples, "There was a certain rich man who had a steward, and an accusation was made of him that he had wasted his goods. And he called him and said to him, 'How is it that I hear this of you? Give an account of your stewardship, for you may no longer be steward.' Then the steward said within himself, 'What shall I do? For my master is taking away the stewardship from me. I cannot dig. I am ashamed to beg.'" So here you have basically an employer-employee situation here. And this employee, this steward, is not doing his job. I don't know if he's just flat out stealing from his employer or what. He's not doing a good job. His employer calls him on the carpet about it. Basically, he's going to lose his job. So this employee has to figure out what he can do to make it after losing this job. He says, "I have resolved what to do, that when I am put out of the stewardship, they may receive me into their houses." So he's thinking, what can I do? I'm fixing to lose this job. What can I do to help other people who will then help me? You know, if I scratch their back, they'll scratch mine, kind of thing. So he called every one of his master's debtors to him and said to the first, "How much do you owe to my master?" And he said, 100 measures of oil. And he said to him, "Take your bill and sit down quickly and write 50. Then he said to another, "And how much do you owe?" And he said, 100 measures of wheat. And he said to him, "Take your bill and write 80. I lost my place. And the master commended the unjust steward because he had done wisely. Okay, now see, if I was this employee's boss, I would be pretty mad at him because he went around and he collected what people owed him, but he only collected a portion and he did it without his boss's authority. But he got commended anyway. I don't think he was commended for his method, but I do think he was commended for his foresight and his planning. I think. "For the children of this world are wiser in their generation than the children of light." I think we're talking about worldly people versus spiritual people. "And I say to you, make friends for yourselves by the riches of unrighteousness, that when you fail, they may receive you into everlasting habitations." So this man was using worldly matters to protect himself, to protect his future. "He who is faithful in what is least is also faithful in much, and he who is unjust in the least is also unjust in much. Therefore, if you have not been faithful in the unrighteous riches, who will commit the true riches to your trust?" So if you can't even deal with earthly matters, men's matters, things of this world, your daily activities, how do you think that you're going to be able to handle the responsibility of spiritual matters, like teaching the gospel of Christ to others? "And if you have not been faithful in what is another man's, who shall give you what is your own? No servant can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and riches." I've always had some difficulty with this parable, because what the steward did wasn't ethical, wasn't moral. He did all this because he knew he was about to lose his job. And he did this without his boss's authority. And he only collected part of what was due his employer. And yet he was commended for it. It's my understanding that he's not being commended for his immoral, unethical behavior, but in his planning and his foresight. And we need to be planning our future too. And our future needs to be heaven. And that's what we need to be planning for, is spiritual matters. Pharisees, who were covetous, or they loved money, also heard all these things, and they derided him. And he said to them, "You are those who justify yourselves before men, but God knows your hearts, for what is highly esteemed among men is an abomination in the sight of God." So, again, he's rebuking the Pharisees because they're just all show. You know, they pretend like they're religious and pious and righteous, and they're not. You know, inwardly, they are schemers and liars and thieves. The law and the prophets were until John, but the law and the prophets would refer to the law of Moses. So the law of Moses was until John. Since that time, the kingdom of God, or the church, the law of Christ, has been preached, and every man presses into it. And it is easier for heaven and earth to pass than for one tittle of the law to fail. So I think what he's saying is, you know, you were under the law of Moses. Now the church or the law of Christ is coming into effect, and nothing that's been prophesied in the Old Testament will fail to be fulfilled. Everything will be fulfilled. Then he puts in this verse that I have struggled with as to why Luke put it in here. And it seems random, but I know it's not random because God doesn't do that. He says, "Whoever divorces his wife and marries another commits adultery. And whoever marries her who is divorced from her husband commits adultery." I don't think that he's all of a sudden switched subjects to marriage, divorce, and remarriage. My only thought on this is perhaps he's referring to what he just referred to in the previous verses, which is the law of Moses and the law of Christ, which are two different laws. Now, if you are trying to obey both laws, you're trying to live under both laws, it's like adultery. It's like a man who divorces his wife and marries another. He's committing adultery. That's the only thing I can think of. If anyone has any ideas, please let me know. Now we're going to get into the rich man and Lazarus. There was a certain rich man. And now, let me just say this up front. This doesn't really have anything to do with that rich people are bad, poor people are good. No. This, even though Jesus refers to one as the rich man and Lazarus as the poor man, it has more to do with righteous versus unrighteous, obedient versus disobedient versus obedient, wicked versus righteous. There was a certain rich man who was clothed in purple and fine linen and feasted sumptuously every day. That's going to be your wicked man. And there was a certain beggar named Lazarus, full of sores, who was laid at his gate and desired to be fed with the crumbs that fell from the rich man's table. Moreover, the dogs came and licked his sores. This man represents righteous. And it came to pass that the beggar died and was carried by the angels into Abraham's bosom. Now, Abraham's bosom is going to be paradise. The rich man also died and was buried, and being in torment in Hades, he lifted up his eyes and saw Abraham afar off and Lazarus in his bosom. Just to break this down, from all the passages that I read in the Bible, it looks to me like when we die, we all go to Hades, which is just the realm of the dead, the grave. So we all go to Hades when we die. Now, then we go to either paradise or torments. So we die, we all die, we all go to Hades or the realm of the dead, either to paradise or in torments. Lazarus, who would represent the righteous, he went to paradise. It's referred to as Abraham's bosom in this passage. Whereas the rich man, who represents wicked, went to torments. And that's a place you don't want to go. So when we die, we either go to paradise or torments. And that's where we stay until judgment day. And then on judgment day, that's when you receive your final sentence of heaven or hell. It's kind of like our justice system today. You know, if somebody gets arrested for a crime, and they go through trial, and let's say they're found guilty, they go back to jail, and then they await their official sentencing. Similar thing, I think. And he cried and said, "Father Abraham, have mercy on me, and send Lazarus that he may dip the tip of his finger in water and cool my tongue, for I am tormented in this flame." So this rich man is in torment, and it is not a good place to be. But Abraham said, "Son, remember that in your lifetime you received your good things, and likewise Lazarus evil things. But now he is comforted, and you are tormented. And besides all this, between us and you there is a great chasm fixed, so that those who would pass from here to you cannot, nor can those who would come from there pass to us." So we get a little bit of glimpse into what happens when we die. And by the way, I don't think this is a parable. It's not referred to as a parable. And usually when Jesus tells a parable, it's an earthly story with a heavenly meaning. Here we're just talking about, you know, when you die, this is what happens. And, you know, usually in a parable, he doesn't name somebody, and he's naming Lazarus in this. By the way, I don't think this is the same Lazarus that, well, I know it's not. It's not the same Lazarus as the brother of Mary and Martha, because, you know, Lazarus wasn't homeless and a beggar. So anyway, between paradise and torments, apparently there's a great gulf, and there is no passing in between them. So no, rich man, Lazarus cannot bring you water to cool your tongue, because there's a great gulf fixed. Now, of course, and Jesus is putting this in somewhat physical terms, whereas we know that heaven and hell and paradise and torments are all spiritual places. So is the man really, you know, burning in a literal flame and wants literal water on his literal tongue? I don't think so. But we have such small, finite minds that we can't comprehend the spiritual world. Then he said, "I ask you therefore, Father, that you would send him to my father's house, for I have five brothers, that he may testify to them, lest they also come into this place of torment." I find it interesting that even though this man was in horrible pain, had so many regrets, was just absolutely just suffering terribly, he thought about his family back on earth, which means he had memories. He had memories of his brothers back on earth, and he did not want them to come there. So was he wicked through and through? Well, obviously he had enough goodness in him that he was very concerned about his five brothers, and he did not want them to come to this place. And so he was begging Abraham, "Please send Lazarus back to my brothers and tell them that everything that they have heard about the Messiah and the church and heaven and hell and God and all that, it's true, and obey it. Don't come here. You do not want to come here." But then Abraham says, "They have Moses and the prophets. Let them hear them." They have, now at this time it would have just been the Old Testament. They have the Old Testament. Let them read it and study it and obey it. But as today, most people will not. They will not open their Bibles. They will not read it. They will not study it. They will not believe it. They will not obey it. And he said, "No, Father Abraham, but if one went to them from the dead, they will repent." So, oh, okay, so if his five brothers saw a ghost, oh, then they would believe. No, no. I mean, look at all of these supernatural acts that are being performed in the first century during this time. And yet so many people still rejected him, still rejected God and Christ, still rejected. So no, a ghost is not going to change their minds. And he, Abraham, said to him, "If they do not hear Moses and the prophets, if they don't read and obey and believe the Old Testament, they will not be persuaded if one rises from the dead. A ghost is not going to change their mind." Now, most of this little story is from the rich man's point of view. Apparently he died. He was not carried by angels, it doesn't look like. It just, the next thing he was aware of is he was in torments. And he was in pain. He was suffering. He had regrets. He was miserable. And he didn't want any of his family members to come there. Nobody. Nobody in his family. Even if he didn't like his five brothers. I don't know if he did or not. But just think about it. This place is so bad. He didn't want any of his brothers to come there. Now, we don't have really anything from Lazarus's point of view. The only thing we know is he died and he was carried by the angels into paradise. That's all we know about him. So we don't know what memories he has. I'm going to guess that he does not have memories of anyone that in his life that was lost. Because how could he be comforted then? He would be very sad. But that's just all speculation. Anyway, that is Luke chapter 16.